Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to another edition of Team Rural Radio. I'm Gina Brown, and I'm your host every morning at 10 a.m. We're going to be talking about all kinds of things. And today the topic I chose was how we got to a taking world. This is a taking world that we live in, and it has a lot to do with merchandising, of course, money. Merchandising and people who were in the trading businesses from ancient days have always monopolized the movement of goods from producer to consumer. So you've had empires that have transitioned through the years to maintain this transition of producer-consumer. And you've heard me say nothing changes if nothing changes. And, you know, it's like my Aunt Carol has a saying from the old day, if you know what game they're playing, they'll never shuffle your deck. Well, the game that they've been playing is the type of game that you see on the side of the road, like a gambling game with the nutshell. And they put the marble under the shell. And the shell game, they just keep moving the shells around, hoping you can't find where the marble is. The game is rigged, see? These merchants that have monopolized trade for thousands and thousands of years that eventually bought into, you know, the monarchies and the bloodlines with their money, became the bankers. And, you know, the church in the early days ruled against usury and loaning money for interest. They knew that was against God's law. Always told the kids, don't break God's law or man's law. But see, we've just kind of become a people who've allowed a certain amount of badness to continue because we don't take the time to find out how this system got set up, is what I call a taking world. Because, see, the folk that are now the not just merchants, it's actually the bankers now. The merchants transitioned into being bankers. So what I call the bankers or these corporate masters, these money changers, these are the ones that are moving economies, moving global economies, moving people. We've become good little consumers, okay? Good little consumers. And when you look at Black Friday and you see people rushing into the Walmart to get that 32-inch TV for $99, believe me, this was not an accidental happening. This has been managed, and the method they use to manage this madness has created a world of scarcity, as if we won't ever get a 32-inch TV if we don't get one on Black Friday for $99. So we see people pushing and shoving, and it just goes all over the globe. I mean, we're supposedly the wealthiest country in the world, and on Facebook you see all these videos of people fighting over these goods on Black Friday. Well, that really shows how shallow we are as a people. And when I say we are as a people, I mean this Christian nation. This is what we have ourselves called, a so-called Christian nation. Well, how do we remember Jesus tossing over the money changers out of the temple and then go into the Walmart fighting over a $99 TV? See, the masters have got the masses confused. Confused. And I was confused. I was confused for a long time. So I'm not pointing fingers at anybody, and certainly not at Christians. I'm sure there's do-gooders and Dudley Do-Rights and other people who don't go to church that could probably go in there and fist fight over a, what was it, a Cabbage Patch doll when we was young. You know, this ain't something that just started happening, this greed. And the greed is down on the, what I call, level, on the ground level, at the grassroots, on the community level. See, I was talking to Aunt Carol, you know, the lady I mentioned yesterday, the Perils of Carol. I love her stories because one of the things we were discussing was the film Psy War or Psychological Warfare, The Battle for Your Mind. You can Google that, Psy War, P-S-Y-W-A-R, The Battle for Your Mind, and it's free. If you Google that, you can watch it online. In that, it was saying that during the early days of TV, a lot of money went into advertising. Because if you look in the 20s, 1910, 20s, 30s catalogs, selling goods described the type of goods that we were getting, whether that was made of walnut, whether it was, you know, made of this fabric, or you know, what amount of quality or hand workmanship went into it. But you get into the 30s, late 30s, 40s, and 50s, and all of a sudden 60s, you start seeing advertising transition to, you know, if you're driving this car, you're going to be happy. If you brush your teeth with this toothpaste, you're going to have white teeth and fresh breath and a good-looking boyfriend. So the expression of happiness equated to the acquisition of a product. And so as they transitioned advertising in between the television shows, you know, buy Joy dish detergent. It's soft on your hands. Ladies don't want hands that look manly. You know, it just on and on about, you know, body odor, a hair color, makeup. I mean, the product was not being sold. What was being sold to us was how we would feel if we bought that product. How would we feel? And I'm sure those people that run in and get those $99 TVs feel good when people come to their home to watch a movie with them or their kids are watching a show and they've got a 32-inch TV and or in the bedroom. Say it was a spare TV. Maybe they feel good that they got that TV. But I promise you, TVs don't buy happiness. I promise you, mouthwash doesn't buy happiness. I promise you, we've been fooled too long. And the wool has been pulled over our eyes because we've been good little sheep. So we've been fleeced. And the shell game has gone on. And this shell game is don't keep your eye on the prize. See, the prize is not material goods. The prize is happiness and your quality of life. Say, for example, the quality of life I have. I'm so joyful. I'm so blissful. I am so happy every day that God has granted me quarter that I may be on this talking show and be talking to any one of you who care to listen because my joy is abundant and I want to share that joy with you. Doesn't come from anything that is here in this world. And you know that deep down inside. You know that. I know that. So how do we go from this taking world? If we know how we got to the taking world, begin to learn how to leave it. Now, in the introduction to this show topic, I did bring up that Aunt Carol was sharing with me the type of shows she watched growing up. You know, Ed Sullivan Show, they had these talent shows, they had Leave It to Beaver, You know, these shows that equated, well, they never showed anyone sleeping in the same bed. So, of course, the parents slept in twin beds. Think of Lucy and Ricky Ricardo. Okay, I love Lucy. So you never saw anything about sex or how babies got there. And the second thing she was very observant of is she said you never saw them going to church. Hey, this is a Leave It to Beaver. These are, you know, Andy Griffith show. These are wholesome, you know, shows in black and white of what your real family should be like, and yet no one was going to choir practice. I thought, geez, she's right. I said, you know what, Aunt Carol? I don't think I ever saw them going to choir practice on the Brady Bunch either. I mean, let's fast forward to the 70s. You know, the kind of shows they were feeding me when I was growing up. They might have had a king-size bed, I think. Can't remember. But I do know the Brady Bunch was never going to church. So what is the purpose of church? If you have the advertising in between the shows of what your family is supposed to be like and then interspersed with what you need to get to have a happy family, okay? Where does church fit into all this? Where does religion fit into all this? And I'm not real religious. I like what my daughter said, that she's spiritual, and I would like to believe that I'm quite wholesome and spiritual, and I am. I don't believe that I am. I am. But this church thing really got me thinking back to something my grandfather said, that his daddy told him that they read in the Bible that widows and orphans were to be cared for by the tithing, and it was to be given to the priestly tribe so that the widows and orphans would be fed and housed and covered. And if a woman died, you know, it would be okay if she married her husband's brother. So in other words, you know, family would somehow try to take care of these women and children. But in the coal towns where my great-grandfather grew up, if a man died in the coal mine, well, the widow could be left destitute. And if she wanted to live in that house, she would have to prostitute. And this is something that the coal town, the coal owners, facilitated simply because you always had new workers coming in. And these women, perhaps they didn't have children. If you had a child old enough to go into the mine, you could stay in the house because, of course, the house was owned by the company town. It's kind of hard to follow this story if you don't know the story of coal mining or coal towns and how they owned the church, they owned the school, they owned the store, they owned the house you live in. The old song, 16 tons deeper in debt, that's what my people grew up through. And grandfather said his daddy told him they began to take up money when they would have a woman widowed. If they could get her on the train, send her back east if she had family, they would, because they knew that the church that was built for them to attend, and believe me, if they weren't in church on Sunday, the company had their name, and the company, or I would call the master, had their name and wanted to know where they were, because just 95 years ago, there was no right to free assembly. There was no right to hold no private meeting. Men couldn't be like off holding some meeting. They might be trying to figure out how to get paid a little more. They might be trying to figure out how to beat the shell game, see? But grandfather told me what the coal company didn't count on was the fact that his daddy could read the Bible and discern for himself what that Bible meant. And they decided that they were going to be brothers and sister keepers, and they would bring the women up out of that ship. Oh, there I go, Aunt Carol. I'm so sorry for cursing there for a sec. But they did this themselves. They took it upon themselves. And so they couldn't go to the pastor and say, you know, what was wrong or what was this or what was that, because he would come back with, turn the other cheek, you know, love thy enemy, love thy neighbor as thyself. So he was propagandizing what was being preached through the church, because he was being paid not only by the coal owner, but he was accepting tithes through guilt because of preaching tithing out of the Bible. Now, I don't want to fast forward and make assumptions about religion or Christians or people today, but I will say Aunt Carol's comment about the fact that the Leave It to Beavers never went to church really made me think, because my background is in behavioral sciences studies. As I've shared before, that's what my background education is. So I'm always wondering, why did someone behave that way, or why do they do that? And so I think the reason none of those shows in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s had people going to church is because when we went to church as children or young people, we went because our families went. We went because that was the place to be. And I did see a show one time that said man needed to trust his neighbor, trust him, his friend. And if he saw someone worshiping in the church, that would help build the trust that this is a community, that this is a place that I want and can feel safe, and this is a place I want to live. So the reason for religions developing were, a few fold. Because, of course, if you look across the synagogue or across the mosque or you look across the room or the church and you see your neighbor sitting there, you think, oh, yeah, I know that guy. I see him down the street taking his garbage out. He must be a nice guy. He's here. So the moral guidelines and the ethics that they were teaching in the churches based upon scriptural interpretation is a good way to say it, was truly based upon dogma. Now, what is tradition and dogma? Dogma, I hate to say it, Aunt Carol, but it's that brown, stinky stuff that drops out the back of dogs. It's just bull. And dogma and moral tradition and guideline is man's way of saying what's right and wrong. It's not your internal gut and your internal heart knowing what's right and wrong. Because, honey, or sir, or mister, or ma'am, or whoever you are listening, I bet you down in your heart and your gut, you know what's right and wrong. Because guess what? Nature gave us the instinctual knowledge to know what offends the universe. It's a universal song, one song. So if we're of one mind, we know it's offensive to kill thy neighbor. We know it's offensive to steal from your neighbor. We know it's offensive to gossip about your neighbor. So these internal truths or principles is where this word I use to describe it, noble, integrity, nobility. You're not born into nobility. You may be born into a monarchy, but you're not born into nobility. Nobility is something inward. Huh? It's free. Just grab a hold to it. You got it. I got it. We got it. So how did we believe that this world we're living in now could possibly be the world we can perceive with our own gut and our own eyes and our own truth? Because we've been watching a shell game, and we've been hoping we'll find the marble. through things, and it's not going to happen. See, it's not going to happen with the acquisition of things. It's not going to happen as long as we remain good little consumers that get our weekly paycheck, go buy the things they advertise is so important online and on the TV, and then go to church on Sunday. Because the double whammy that they gave us, it's like they gave us the cake with loaded sugar, and then they put the icing on there. But if that wasn't enough, they put the ice cream on when they said, go to church. So you got your indoctrination, your propaganda through TV and advertising of how to become a good little consumer and how to work. And then you got, and through your school, and then you got your shame and guilt, enough of that, through corporate churches. I mean, these are all incorporated nonprofit churches, but they're still corporations. And so when I talk about merchants and I talk about empire and I talk about all of the years through the ancient times that nothing has changed, this is what I'm talking about. They think they've got slick, giving us smartphones and these electronic little gadgets and devices to hold as if it can preoccupy the soul. No, it preoccupies the mind, but it does not preoccupy the soul. And so you know for a fact down in your heart, this taking world where people are struggling is not equitable. It is not defendable. It is not a purposeful living, and it's not righteous. And, you know, I'm not going to gut the churches or gut religion, but when you realize right there on the watchtower it says Jehovah Witnesses, you know, Watchtower Incorporated. Okay. The Seventh-day Adventists, they're incorporated. All of them are incorporated. And when you look at the word corporation, and then you look at where this linguistic word came from, corporation, it's a corpse. Corpse. It's dead. It's an entity that has no life in it. It's on paper. And because it's on paper, and because the walls that have built up in stone, we go inside. See, the temple is within, right? That's what they say. The temple's in within. I mean, Jesus said that. Hell. Oh, sorry, Aunt Carol. But all I'm trying to say, people, is that we don't need to go buy things because we've been guilted and shamed that we're not good people or good family if we don't have the car like the Joneses next door. And how do we leave a taken world? Quit buying stuff. Quit. Just think for a minute. Maybe if one Friday out of a month we went and just stopped, you know, purchasing one thing. Heck, I don't care what it would be, gas. Say we just don't buy gas on Fridays. Think how quick they'd start giving us some social services. Think how quick they would give the veterans some respite, and they would give them their disabilities, give them everything that they deserve. Think for a minute, our seniors. Because then, as a people, we would have some way to negotiate what we feel is a more giving world and an equitable world. And I know people may, you know, want to get into politics and say socialism or democracy or a republic or a dictator, but it really is not fascism, Nazi, whatever. It's not about that for Gina Brown or for Team Rural Radio. What it is about is coming out of this taking world whole, together, holistic, in a way that's healing, healing. I want to claim a healing for us as a people. That's not harmful. That's very loving. And, hey, we can claim it. We can have it. And there was another lady that one day I went to something she did. It was a festival. Twice a year she would tell me that in the old days, in the spring and the fall, they would have festivals. And, you know, they'd have markets and things. But they used to come, and then they'd swap clothing. Think about it, in the Old West. They lived so far out, they'd swap clothing. Oh, Jimmy Joe's daughter's 12 now, and so-and-so's 6, you know, and so-and-so can wear her clothes, and then they just swap clothes, swap books, swap things. This is why I was talking about recycle.org. It's a way to give free to people what they need, because I think that if people received what they need, and this is what a lady told me yesterday that I talked to, love this lady, love her. She said that violence, their needs met. Violence is people seeking to get their needs met. Huh, I kind of believe that, because this world of scarcity and this fractional banking, which I'll go into another day and explain how the money changers and the money system is really working against us. We can stop this, people. We can go to a more loving, giving world, one mind, one moment, and one mother at a time. Women, women, I'm speaking to you, sisters, mothers. We can be the change that we seek. We can give. See, child services don't serve. They only take. And I'm not down in child services, don't get me wrong, or social services. But what I'm saying is people have divided our families too long. We have allowed these corporations, these non-governmental bodies, these governmental bodies to divide families and loved ones. And we can do better. We can do better. We can demonstrate to others the love that our family has for the love that we have for your family. And let me tell you, a cousin of mine yesterday said, Gina Brown, you got great-grandfather's backbone. And I said, well, you do too. And she said, I know it. And I said, well, I'm so happy to be a part of this family. And she said, yeah, me too. And I thought, well, I wish everyone would understand we're part of a human family, a human common family. When we come to the point where we understand corporate masters' ways of division with the TV, the media, the advertising, the religion, then we will all come to at one moment where we realize with our conscious evolution, our conscious understanding, that we can change a world, that we can resonate with our hearts the desires of happiness. And I desire you to be happy today. I desire you to be joyful today and blissful, because your true nature is joyful and blissful. So why are you suffering? Why are you suffering? Because you've been playing the shell game, baby. Quit playing the shell game. I love you. Have a great day.